You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this glorious planet we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. You've never tuned into The Kevin Smith Show before. It's your first experience, and we're glad you're here, and I think you're going to have a great time. You need to know that we publish a free weekly newsletter. It is called the K-Files E-Zine. And you can subscribe absolutely free of charge, no strings attached, by going to my website. Just look for the little button that says K-Files E-Zine and click it and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. As I said, there are no strings attached. I had the privilege this afternoon of being a guest on someone else's radio show. I was on I think it's Terra Talk. Yeah, Terra Talk Radio. It was pre-recorded. The host is Cullen Knight, and that show will be aired on Saturday evening, so you may want to tune in to Terra Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com and catch that that interview. It was a neat deal. Being on the other side of the interview is different, and I enjoyed it immensely, and urge you to tune in. Astronomers looking for life out there in the vastness of space may have been looking for life in all the wrong places. A new experiment, it was a model, you know, computer model of the way stars move, discovered, that model exhibited to the astronomers doing the study, that stars do not move in the way they thought they moved, and that, in fact, the zone in which they thought they would be most likely to find Earth-like planets with life was the wrong zone. And so now they need to be looking elsewhere. What they discovered is that, you know, the assumption was that the most elements of the building blocks of life would be found near the center of our galaxy. And so they needed to look for stars that were somewhere between Earth and the center of the galaxy. And what they've discovered is that stars that are spinning out of that region actually move toward the edge of the spiral arms of our galaxy. And so the stars most likely to have planets with the elements necessary for life may in fact be out in the arms of our galaxy, you know, the spiral arms of our galaxy. And so they have determined that is the place that they need to look. So it says that previous studies failed to account for the star's migration because the movements are very subtle. And by looking at a galaxy over 1 billion years, those movements and the forces behind them became more apparent. So we may yet find life out there. We just have to look elsewhere. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to be talking with Eugene B. Colson, and I think this is, strap yourself into your seat. This is going to be, this one's going to launch. We'll be back. Eugene B. Colson is my guest for this edition of the Kevin Smith Show, and you need to know that that is not his real name. He tells me that Eugene B. Colson is a cover name that he used at one time in his former life as a covert special ops operative. I talked with Eugene at some length and found his story absolutely fascinating. Now, remember that it is the practice of this show to bring you guests that are rocking boats and making waves. Eugene certainly qualifies, as you are about to discover. Via his own radio show called Eugene B. Colson Mind Controlled America, heard over bbsradio.com, as well as his guest appearances on other radio shows, Eugene has been making waves and rocking boats. Eugene, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And I have been making waves. They've tried to kill me numerous times this year.
When you say they, who are we talking about?
We're talking about the Illuminati, the Jesuits, the CIA, the Satanists. You know, they all work in conjunction with each other. Not everyone in the CIA is part of this, but they know what's going on.
And what have you been saying that put you on the hit list?
Well, Eugene B. Colson is my SEAL and Delta Force operational name. Anybody in Special Ops knows who that is. And I'm a victim of CIA MKUltra Operation Monarch Mind Control.
What is Operation Monarch? Well, first of all, let's back up. What is MKUltra for those who are just getting involved in this world of the strange and unexplained? They may not know. So let's explain, what is MKUltra?
Well, MKUltra was originally designed by Joseph Mengele, and it's a CIA mind control program. Joseph Mengele was trying to create the ultimate super warrior, and they brought him over here, part of Operation Paperclip, to teach the OSS, which became the CIA, how to do it. And then the CIA taught the Satanic Covens how to do this because they need children with repressed memory syndrome for the program.
Okay, and what was the purpose of this MKUltra program?
To create the ultimate warrior. If you do MKULTRA search on the internet with CIA mind control, you'll see numerous documents that have been Freedom of Information Acted from the government. There's information, a lot of disinformation. You even see the 1978 Senate hearings where they ordered the CIA to destroy all the records and cease and desist.
And as a part of MKUltra, there was something called Operation Monarch. Is that right?
That's when the CIA was ordered to cancel MKUltra and cease and desist and destroy the records. They just merely renamed the set of project MKUltra. It was Operation Monarch. There's M-O-N-A-R-C-H, but there's also a subhead of Monarch, M-O-N-A-R-K, for the ultimate killer. I am of the latter.
Let's back up and say that again. You are part of the Ultimate Killer Monarch program?
That's correct. I was, when the guy that went out in the Korean War with a knife all night long, the first guy to do it, and everybody copied it, he moved at the end of my neighborhood when I was five, and that's how I got into the program.
All right. And now, tell us a little bit about this Operation Monarch and how You became a part of that. You've just mentioned a little bit of that. And what do they do to make you an ultimate killer?
Well, I think I was a generational family, satanic family. My father's middle name is Merlin, and his uncle's name was Merlin. Who names their kid after a druidic warlock? And so they profiled me when I was five and put me into the program, and he started training me militarily very shortly thereafter. And they ritually abuse kids, torture them, sexually abuse them, kill things, people in front of them, so it causes the mind to split. And then they take that split, repressed mind, and they can program it like a computer.
And this happened to you?
Yeah. And my entire ex-family.
All right, now, how did you come to know that you were in this Project Monarch? Were you conscious of this the entire time, for your entire life? Were you conscious of this?
No, I was not. I had dreams throughout my late teenage years, early 20s and on, about all this combat with this elaborate equipment, and I'd wake up and I'd think where that came from. And I knew something was drastically wrong in my life, but I could never put my finger on it until 2000.
What happened in 2000?
Well, in 1997 or 1996, I heard on the Art Bell Show, David John Oates, who had discovered reverse speech.
Yeah.
And you can check him out, reversespeech.com. And what reverse speech is you take a tape-recorded message of anyone and you play it backwards, and you'll actually hear a portion of their thoughts or beliefs come out. Actually, babies learn to speak backwards first. If you take a tape-recorded message from a toddler or a baby like 8 months and beyond, play it backwards quite often, you'll hear them clearly talking.
All right, and so how did that play a part in this?
Well, I didn't believe it, so I ordered one of the machines, and I got it, and I started using it, and I heard the church that I used to belong to for years was a mafia front organization, so I started running sermon tapes through it, and eventually I found out not only were they mafia, they were CIA, they were satanic, they were Illuminati, they were Jesuit, they were FBI, they were foreign intelligences. And then I started checking my family, and I found out that they were all mind-controlled sex slaves for this bunch.
Now, what was there about the reverse speech that made you put confidence in what you were hearing? I mean, let me tell you why I asked that, and then I'll let you answer it. I've had David John Oates on this show a couple of times, and I find it very interesting. I find it actually fascinating. But I, as of yet, have not reached a point where I understand why we ought to have confidence in that, why we should not think that it's coincidental that these things come up when you run something backwards.
Well, David John Oates, his definition of a reversal in reverse speech, it has to do with your forward conversation, where I took a much broader view, I'll take whatever I can get. And I found out that the vast majority of what comes out comes from the subconscious mind. So it's a portion of their beliefs or recounts of history. And when I found that all these ministers were involved in this, I took it as the weakest possible hearsay evidence, and I started asking questions about these people. And I found out this one was Office of Naval Intelligence before he was a minister. This one was CIA. This one was FBI. This one was Air Force Intelligence. This was Office of Naval Intelligence, and on it went.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm former international police. Now, I can tell you straight up, I have no connection with any government agency. I am truly out here on my own. But what if you play something backward that I've said, and it says I'm one of them. I can tell you, and you could hook me up to polygraph, and I'll pass the polygraph. I have no affiliation with any government agency.
Well, if you take nobody discovered thought of this until last October. If you take hook somebody to a polygraph, use the highest dollar voice stress analyzers, and use the reverse speech machine at the same time. It's three-way fail-safe. You can't fake.
Okay. All right. I understand that.
All of them are doing it now. Nobody thought of it before I did. See, last October, they tried to kill a big, powerful guy in the world, and the mafia was involved in it. Those mafia guys that got arrested on February 7th, 8th, in New York, New Jersey, and Sicily, and I'm the one that found out about it, and I got him warned. I'll give God the credit. And then I told them, here's how you find the perps around it. So you hook some, and everybody around them has to take the test. And if they know that if they get caught, they're going to be tortured to death to find out everything that they know, the more stressed out you are or in fear, the more comes out, and you can't fake the system.
Okay, fair enough. I understand how that would work. Okay, so you found out that you were part of this Monarch program, but I still am unclear as to how. I mean, you found out that a lot of people associated with this church were not what they were presenting themselves to be, and then how did that lead to you knowing?
It was a clearinghouse for mind control victims, for the CIA and related perps. From sexual slavery, child sex slavery, to assassination, to military ops.
A church?
Yeah, most of the churches in this country are run by the perps. And if you don't believe me, I encourage all of your listeners either get the software or the reverse speech machine, learn how to use it, start running your minister's sermon tapes through it, and you'll be amazed at how many you get.
Okay. But how did that lead to you finding out that you were part of Monarch?
Well, I had met, in 1999, I had called, I had contacted Ted Gunderson, who's a former LA FBI bureau chief, and told him he wanted to know everything I knew. And I told him, and he told me I'm one of the finest investigators he ever knew, and that was before I knew I was part of the program. And I had found out they had done some horrible things to my family, and I didn't realize I was a victim yet. I had told Sue Ford, who's written several books on the subject, in April of 2000, that I thought my ex-wife was a victim, and she says they don't usually pair a monarch with a non-monarch. I said, well, I'm not a monarch, and I didn't remember until September.
What caused you to remember?
They ordered her minister, who was a satanic priest, a Gambino Mafia Monsignor, and CIA, ordered my wife to leave me and divorce me when I found out my ex-wife and children were victims. And they made my life pure hell. I was doing volunteer work at Mothers Against Sexual Abuse. And I had my wife, who was a childhood sexually abused by her father, seeing a psychologist, a hypnotherapist, on that. And when I was getting close to her finding out what happened, that's when they took my family away from me. And when I walked into the door of Mothers Against Sexual Abuse, I met the gal who founded it online and called her up, and we were going to go do lunch. There was a 59-year-old Mexican-American guy there who was terrified of me and warmed up to me after I gave the organization $1,500. And then when I started to remember, he was known as the Walking Arsenal in Vietnam. He was the most notorious sniper in Nam. I did my first sniper mission under him in Vietnam in 73, my Christmas vacation, my junior year in high school, and then the Bunker Hill action, which was an accident, was what happened.
All right. So you found out that you were Monarch. Let's go back to what Monarch is. You said these are ultimate killers. Why are they ultimate killers? Why are you classifying them that way? Or why do you use that terminology?
That's the MONARK program, which you're not going to find on the internet. MONARCH will. If you've ever seen Denzel Washington's movie Manchurian Candidate, that is Monarch.
Okay.
That's 50s and 60s technology. The brain implant, I don't know about that. That's in the movie, but I've seen an X-ray of a guy's head on the internet who had a similar implant for years.
What about you? Do you have an implant?
I've got GPS monitor implants somewhere where I don't know, but I don't think I have a brain implant. No, but I could be wrong.
All right, now on your radio show, the name of your radio show is Mind Controlled America.
That's right.
Why that? I mean, do you think that is that because you think that most Americans are mind controlled?
Well, if you go, if you watch television, you play video games, you go to church, you go to school, you are on a low level of mind control. You know, and I had an expert on that discovered that in the early 80s, and that's when he went away from broadcasting.
All right, so if people are listening to the radio, if they're watching television, then they are being subjected to mind control.
Yeah, low-level neurolinguistic programming. But there are 3.6 million Americans that are clinical mind control victims like myself, and very few males ever come out of it. Remember, it's mostly women.
Why is it that most males don't come out of it?
Well, part of the memory, before they do the memory dump debriefing, every male gets a wild sexual lay to get rid of the emotional trauma, and the last thing they remember before having their mind erased with drugs, electroshock, and torture is a pleasant thought, and they may dream of it occasionally, and they'll think, wow, where did that come from?
All right, and how is that different from the women?
I think they, before they dump their memory, they rape them and torture them. I don't think they have anything pleasant happen when they do their memory dump. And I think that's the way it is. I'm not sure, but I'm usually right when I think something because it's stuck somewhere in my brain.
All right, so there are 3.6 million Americans that have been subjected to this in-your-face mind control.
Laboratory, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few in the military. There are quite a few Delta Force, Force Recon, and SEAL team members that are in the military that don't know they're Delta Force, Force Recon, or SEAL.
Now, how is that possible?
Well, you know, they're a lot better than they used to be. I don't think they need to take, back when they got me in the program, they'd have to take somebody at an early age, 3, 4, 5, 6, but now they have better drugs, they have hypnotic, or they have a virtual reality hood or the trip chair they'll put you in. They're much better at it now. They can grab somebody off the street, do their routine on them for several hours, they go assassinate somebody or do something else, they come back, they erase their memory, and they'll probably never remember it, or they may dream about it.
All right, but you were able to reclaim your memories.
That's correct.
How did you do that?
I went to 4 years of hypnotherapy. I started to pursue Ford's recommendation. I started journaling my dreams, my repressed memories. And when you journal it, more will come out. You just keep going back to it, thinking it over and over and over again, and eventually it'll come back.
All right, so you went through 4 years of hypnotherapy. You're journaling your dreams. How can you be sure? Well, I'll have to. The break has just begun. So we'll have to take a break, and when we come back, I'll ask that question. And my guest is Eugene B. Colson. We'll be back right after this.
As I remembered each memory, I would approach military personnel and ask if these different actions happened exactly like I remembered them, especially when I'd find somebody in the special ops community. I found numerous people that have served under my command, that I've served with, the walking arsenal at Mothers Against Sexual Abuse. When I remembered him, I confronted him, he admitted it, and he broke off contact shortly thereafter. So I have investigated it. I had a year investigation going on with Colonel Smith out in California, who was head of the Los Angeles Veterans Administration. He knew all about Monarch. He knew quite a bit about my five operational names. Tried to help me, but it was squelched by the CIA.
How do you know that it was the CIA that squelched it?
Because I have uncle that was very high-ranking CIA. He died a little over a year ago, and I found out a number of my uncles were CIA. And I was dealing with a congressman out in California. He was bought off by the CIA. I'm dealing with a congressman where I live now, and his aide knows about one of my operational names and knows about one of the classified books I wrote at a mind control level, three editions. He knows about Monarch, and the DOD and the CIA were supposed to respond within 2 weeks to him on my behalf as of 2 years ago.
And they have not responded.
Well, the congressman has admitted quite a bit to him. He already knew a lot. He knows a lot more than he lets on. But, you know, he's dealing with parameters, and I respect that. He's still trying to help me. The aide is.
All right. Now, when you and I talked, I believe it was yesterday, you mentioned that when you were part of all of this, that you had been taken out to Area 51 and that you had been shown some things. So I want us to get into that. But I want to ask you first, why were you taken to Area 51?
I was traveling to California to Florida, and that was on my path to Florida. And they had me stop in there, and they put my uniform on. I was putting my Eugene B. Colson mode, Delta Force, and four scientists took me down to sub-level 1.1, which makes me think there's at least 10 sub-levels.
So, well, let's pause for a moment. Now, you were under orders to stop there?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a mile diameter round substructure. And four scientists and two armed Air Force guards were with me. And on level 1.1, as far as you could see, there were infant baby girls to 15-year-old girls, and they all looked very familiar.
Okay.
And they said, well, I said, what am I doing here? They said, you're here for tissue samples. I said, what are all these little girls doing here? And these scientists had crazy eyes, like mass murderers, rapists. One guy was white as snow. And I said, how long have you been down here? He says, I haven't left this facility for 17 years. I said, what are all these little girls doing here? And they said, oh, no, these aren't girls. These are clones. God didn't create them. We did.
All right.
And there were the grays. The grays were running around taking care of them. And they had these elaborate respirators on. The little four-foot gray that people refer to as aliens.
Mm-hmm.
I said, where did these come from? They said, well, we reverse engineered these from the Roswell crash. We can actually make the grays better and more efficient than the ones that crashed at Roswell, but we cannot reduplicate the anti-gravity devices. And that's where they reverse engineered, and they got fiber optics, they got microprocessors, space-age material, computers, were all reverse engineered from Roswell. But the grays don't look like the ones at Roswell. And so I said, well, what am I doing here? They said, well, we want you to impregnate as many of these clones as you can while you're here. I said, what? You want me to have sex with these little girls? They go, oh, no, no, no. They're not little girls. These are clones. And I said, do you have sex with them? They said, oh, yeah, several times a day. I said, oh, so you just consider these blow-up dolls with more features. And they wanted me to have sex with them. I said, not right now. I said, tell me and show me more. And, you know, they said, well, this is a totally green substructure. We use the excrement from the clones to make fertilizer for our hydroponic gardens. You have any questions at this point?
No. I just want to hear the story.
Okay, so so they wanted tissue samples. I said, show me and tell me more. I don't have a problem with this right now. And these guys are looking at each other all surprised, the scientists, and they said, okay. They didn't realize how dangerous I am when someone gets inside my head. When someone gets inside my head, you just open Pandora's box. And but the difference between earlier when I was mind controlled, in the last number of years, whenever they get inside my head, I know who I am consciously, and I'm upset. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening. I am just listening. I want to hear the story.
Okay, so then they take me down to the bowels of this thing, sublevel 21.1. And as far as you can see, this is a mile-round substructure. There are cages, and these cages are full of experiments. And I said, what are we doing down here? I said, what is this? They said, oh, well, we're gathering data. And in each of these cages was a cross mutation between man, animal, insect, or variation thereof. And some of them could talk because they're part man and they did have like a child's intellect. And they'd say, help me, please. And you go over to the cage close enough to where they could reach for you. They'd reach out and try to tear your head off. And I said to the scientist, I said, what are we doing? What is all this? They said, well, we're gathering data. I said, what do you mean you're gathering data? And they said, well, we're gathering data. I said, well, what happens when you've gathered enough data? Well, the experiment ends. I said, what does that mean? They said, the experiment ends. I said, oh, you turn them all into fertilizer. They go, well, yeah. I said, well, this would take forever because, man, this thing is full. They said, oh, that's no problem. We just gas the whole floor, and all we got to do is haul the bodies out. I go, really? And they said, we just put the new experiment in the cage. We're not to move the cages.
All right. Now, you said that this is at Area 51. It's way below the surface of the Earth, and you said it's about a mile circular substructure.
Mile diameter circular, yes.
Mm-hmm. And now, I want to fast forward a little bit because I know we're going to run up against the next break. You ended up having to fashion an escape from here. And after you escaped from this situation, where did you go?
Well, let's go to level. Then they took me to level 5.5, and that's a command center for the whole unit. And it's around the command center in the center. Well, I'd probably say it's about 40 feet across. And two-thirds of the walls were, you know, to have consoles up to windows, and in the back was all computers. And as far as you could see were rows and rows and rows of pregnant 15-year-old, I call them girls, they call them clones and hosts, in beds hooked up to life support. Above the life support unit is a fetus in a jar hooked up to life support, and there's little grays all over the place wearing their elaborate respirators and, you know, white uniforms and gloves servicing them. And when one of these grays would want to download a significant amount of information between one to the other, they would just touch foreheads and download from one to the other. And I said, what is this? They said, oh, this is where we make the grays. I go, really? I don't have a problem with that. Tell me and show me more. And they say, okay. I said, oh, by the way, how do you guess sublevel 21.1? And these guys were crazy enough to pull out two of the scientists pulled out keys from their pocket, and they stuck them in two turnstiles and turned them, and then they had toggle switches, 1.1 to 21.1, of how they gassed the floors. And I go, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. I don't have a problem with that. Show me and tell me more. And I said, well, what are all these hosts doing? And they said, well, this is how we make the grays. They said these cloned girls have, or cloned hosts, have a fetus, one to replace themselves when they're 13, and then when they're 14 and something, the other fetus, it's in the jar above the life support unit, and the third fetus is where they incubate the host. And they hook a tube into the brain of a three-month fetus, and they pump in a radioactive material called plutonium. Heavy metals, viruses, and diseases. And these heavy metals attach at a nanotechnology level to the proteins and cell structure of these androids while they're growing. And at 3 months, and that's why they're gray, by the way, is because they've got so many heavy metals. And if these things were to breed on you too long or to bite you or to scratch you, these are biologic weapons. You would die a quicker and more painful death than being bitten by a Komodo dragon. And they take the excrement from these grays, and they make biological weapons with it.
All right, we are into a break, and we'll continue when we come back. More with Eugene B. Colson right after this. We are back, and my guest this evening is Eugene B. Colson. Okay, Eugene, you were telling us about how they make these grays, and then you, without, I'm not really sure that it's necessary for us to go into the details of how you escaped, but what
I'd really like to get in how they make them. You know, there's one thing I forgot to tell, because I asked them, I said, where did these things come from?
Mm-hmm.
And they said they came from pre-flood man. And right before Noah's flood occurred, they went into outer space in some form of hyperstasis. And they said, we believe they came from Mars, and there's another planet, I believe it's beyond Mars, where there's an asteroid belt in our solar system where it was destroyed. And there's a satanic tie to all these.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Satan was influencing those worlds like he is this one, and he got those two worlds to destroy themselves, and he's trying to do it here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they said they thought they came from. This is what they told me. And so I'm looking at all these rows of beds, and they told me about the phlebotomy, how they create one. And then they said it. 3 months, which would be 6 months of incubation, which would be 6 months pregnant, they would have to do what they call a sectiotomy. They would have to cut it out and
cut what out?
Remove it, because cut out the android, the infant gray, and remove it, because if they did not cut it out, it would start to eat its way out of the host and both would die. Now, the hosts are hooked up to life support the whole time this is going on, and they're dying because these heavy metals, diseases, and viruses are killing them. And eventually they turn green right before they do the sectiotomy. And you're seeing life support after life support unit being wheeled out of this place to the operating level where they cut it out by the grays. And I said, well, I don't have a problem with that right now. Show me and tell me more. They said, okay. So they take me to the other end of the substructure, which is a half mile away. And we put on this elaborate, we put in earplugs, these elaborate hearing protectors. I said, what are we putting these on? They said, if you were walking in that door without this hearing protection, your eardrums would burst. So they take me inside, and 500 to 1,000 of them, infant ones. And as soon as they get them in there, they castrate them because they don't need their genitals. A port is much more efficient for them for urination. And they have these teeth, you know, like some of these deep sea underwater fish, and lots of them. And they put a diaper on it, and they're drinking this red liquid in bottles instead of milk. And once we got outside, I said, what's in those red bottles? They go, oh, well, that's the blood that we pulled out of the host. That's its first liquid nourishment. I go, then what are the infants doing in the jar above the life support unit? They said, oh, that's its first solid meal. I said, well, I don't have a problem with that. Tell me and show me more. And they said, you know, you should be very honored here. I said, why should I be very honored? They said, because these are all clones of you. And I said, really? I said, why me? They said, well, you're the most efficient killer that the nation has ever created, and we've perfected your DNA to a perfection level to create these things. I go, really? Well, I'm quite honored. I said, I don't have a problem with that. Tell me and show me more. So next to the nursery was written across the top of a 4x8 steel door, Chucky's Playpen from Hell in blood red. And it had a 3x3 glass wired window. And I look in there, and there's hundreds and hundreds of these things, about 12 to 14 inches tall. And I say, what are these? Oh, that's a toddler unit. And I'm looking in the window, and they have some monkey bars over on one side, and over in the far corner was a 15-year-old host that they were munching on. And I'm looking in the window, and one of the scientists had a clipboard computer that he can control the whole facility with, because these were the command and control scientists. And I look in the window, and I said, I thought you said these things are asexual. They go, they are. Oh, no, first I said, hey, that camera there, I said, I haven't seen what I look like on camera for quite a while. I said, can you focus that camera on me through the window? And they go, yeah, sure. And they do. I said, hey, it looks pretty good. So I'm looking in the window, and I said, I thought you said these things were asexual. And they go, well, they are. I said, well, I see a little penis on one of them. They go, really? And they're crowding up by the window for scientists. And they had knee-high rubber boots and black pants and the white overcoats, and they're crowding in there. And where is it? Where is it? I said, no, it's over in the corner. You have to open the door to see it. So these guys open this door, and there's a semicircle stainless steel 6-foot diameter pad that is electrocuting Sarah open the door so that these things can't come over and try to bite them or scratch them. And they all standing in front of the door, so I shoved all four scientists in the door. One guy had his keys stuck in the door there from the inside, slammed the door shut, and I turn around and I crush the larynx of the two guards. And these guys are pounding on the windows, and they say, let us out, please let us out. And I go, I'll let the guy out with the
project aid.
So I opened the door, and I pounded on the other tree and pulled the other guy out. He handed me the set of keys, and then I floored him with a punch to the face, and he said, I thought you were going to let me out. I go, I was, but I didn't tell you I was going to let you. I wasn't going to put you back in, so I opened the door, threw him in, and snapped the key off in the door. And they're saying, let us out, let us out. I said, you guys don't have to worry about a thing. I said, God didn't create these things. You did. Have a good time feeding my baby brothers. So I took the two guns and their ammo off the guards, and I ran for a half mile as fast as I could to the command center. I hit the master alarm and got on the loudspeaker, and I said, there's been a horrible accident on sublevel 5.1. Come down, hurry, hurry. So about 20 scientists, a big muscly gray,
or
two armed Air Force guards are there. And they said, what's the problem?
Put a mile across.
I stood in the doorway with the place open because I got two automatic pistols shoved behind my back. And I said, they locked themselves in Chucky's Playpen from Hell, and they had the keys on them. I couldn't open the door. So they take the camera, and they show it on these guys. One of them staggering around. Several of them are down, and they're being chewed on. And they go, oh, my God, this is a horrible accident. I said, hey, why don't you send muscle-bound Chucky down there with a set of keys to get him out of there? So they do. He takes off. I got my foot in the door. And while he's about 30 feet away from me, I pulled the two handguns out of my back, and I'm aiming them, one at the two sets of guards at about a 45-degree separation with my arms. I'm looking down the middle so I can see both while I'm pumping rounds into the big, muscly gray. And I told the guards to drop their guns and leave. And the scientists all crowded over in the corner, and I shot them all in the left knee. And then I took the two sets of keys, and I put them in the gas arming switches, and I gassed every floor, and I had a nervous breakdown before I gassed sublevel 1.1. Because those were clones of my ex-wife, daughters, and other people connected with me.
All right. You left. When you left...
landfall, west of the Mississippi. Now...
since then. I mean, I would think that they would send every assassin after you necessary to eliminate you after you did that.
Well, you see, I was so upset that after I broke everyone's neck, I twisted their heads off and made a pyramid out of them. And if everybody that's listening looks up Lieutenant Colonel Greg Rinchick on the Internet, you will find him. And it wasn't until he showed me a photo of the alien infants that I remembered. I was in siege mode. I had the weapons from the other two guards, and him and I did numerous sniper missions together, and he came down and talked me out. And I'm sure they tried to kill me, but every mission I ever did for the military, I should have been dead. God protected me, and I'm still here. I mean, they've even had the Grays in my house clawing my back while I'm drugged, trying to kill me, but God protects me. That's how I'm still alive. Have they tried to kill me with assassin after assassin? Yes, they have. But I'll give God the credit.
All right. Now, you said, we're only a minute away or so from break, so we'll have to do this quick. But you said earlier that there have been several attempts on your life this year.
More than several. I'm not going to say how many because I wake up with needle. It's been 2 weeks since I woke up with a needle mark in me. I'll put it that way.
All right. So how is it that you are still alive? I mean, if this happens while you're asleep and you don't know it until you wake up, how is it that you're still alive?
Well, if God decides you're not going to die, you're not going to die until a point in time which he sees fit. Now, I'm not saying I'm as great as him, but George Washington, on a regular basis, when he would disrobe at night after a battle, he would find bullet holes forward and aft of his uniform. And he knew this, and it made him fearless. And the bad guys knew that I should have been dead on every mission. And one of the euphemisms they gave for me was God. And if they was making a decision whether somebody should do the dirty deed and kill whoever we were sent out to kill, they would usually pick me. They'd say, let God do it, because God protected me.
So do you think that they're ever going to be successful in taking you out?
No, not until a time which God sees fit. My name crosses the White House desk numerous times every day now. And he's not happy with me. I've actually talked to him several times on SATCOM communication. Last mission I did was in the first week of January of this year. And he wasn't happy with me.
Well, we have to get into that a little bit when we come back from break, but we have a break starting up right now. All right, folks, Eugene B. Colson, his radio show is called Mind Controlled America on bbsradio.com. We'll be back right after this. All right, we are back, and we are talking with Eugene B. Colson. Now, Eugene, we only have just a very few minutes left because of the situation I described earlier about our phone system. We have to clear the line so we can give the audience a chance to call in and discuss what they've heard, and we're operating on half our phone system. So, but before we went away for break, you said that your name is going across, and I understood you to mean the president's desk. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, every day, several times a day, they have the my real name. We'll just call it the Eugene Report. Anyway, the first wee hours of the morning, the first Wednesday in January, I woke up on a C-130, heavily drugged, wearing a uniform I did not recognize. I was talking like a drunk because I was so drugged, but instead of waking up as SEAL Captain Eugene B. Colson, and I'm not officially a SEAL, so don't anybody say that I am, but I have an operational name and I've done a hell of a lot of missions, I was myself. And I'm looking at these guys, and I don't know who I'm with, so I say, where's my jacket? They said, it's hanging on the wall. And I'm wearing a uniform I don't recognize, and the jacket had some kind of sergeant insignia on the front that I never recognized, and I said, where's my weapons bag? And they say, it's right here, and they had a broken-down Remington M16 long rifle, Series 7, which is a full 8-inch 50-cal round. And our mission was, we landed on the cocaine corridor in Nicaragua about 30, 40 clicks in a C-130 from two sandbag fortifications at the end of the corridor, and our orders were to kill everyone and seize the cocaine. So we drive this Nicaraguan army truck to the location, We got in a firefight, took the one sandbag fortification, and the mission was failing because we spent half our ammo. And I said, I'm not going to lose the first mission for myself as myself. So I jumped up on the palisade, and I'm waving this machete around, and I'm screaming at him. I says, you can't kill me until God decides I'm dead. And they shot the machete with two bullet holes out of my hand. And the SEAL lieutenant says, Captain Coulson, get down. You're going to get killed. I says, you're not dealing with Captain Coulson. And I said my real name, and I thought he was going to have a heart attack. And so I jumped down. I says, I'm not going to lose this first mission for myself. So I left my flak jacket, which had my weapons display of the 50 cal with them, and I talked to another SEAL in the going following me behind while they provided firing cover. Me and another SEAL took the other sandbag fortification and took 21 prisoners. And when the other SEALs came up, I ordered everyone to cease fire. And they says, our orders are to kill everyone. I said, I'm countermanding those orders right now. And they jumped the wall, and then I disarmed everyone with an empty 45. I piled their weapons in the middle of the floor. They're squatted down with their fingers laced behind their neck while I'm arguing with Protos on why we're not going to kill the prisoners.
Okay.
The argument went on for...
So, but just to clarify, they are monitoring you very closely, and your name is going across the president's desk. If that's the case, I can assure you that they are monitoring this very closely, this broadcast.
They monitor every phone call that I make. Everybody monitors it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got my way, and I released the SEALs, or I released the prisoners, and we captured 40 metric tons of cocaine. And this is filtered all the way down to regular National Guard units. Quite a few of them heard about the biggest seizure ever outside the United States, 40 metric tons of cocaine. 2C-130s full.
All right. We're very rapidly approaching. In fact, I've only got about 60 seconds left here until I'm going to need to start letting the audience call in. Let me say again, folks, that Eugene B. Coulson has a radio show. It is on bbsradio.com. It is called Mind Controlled America. When is that show on, Eugene?
It's on 10 a.m. Pacific to 11 a.m. You'd have to look it up on the Internet because I don't remember the PBS Internet Radio website. But real quick, I would like to ask you, you and I discussed a lot of very classified things that I haven't said on this show.
I want to clarify this. You told me things that you said were classified. I personally do not know any information that I know to be classified, okay? I am not in possession of classified information, but you did tell me some things that you said were classified.
Well, there's been numerous rumors out. Have you heard any of the rumors of anything we discussed without going through classified sources?
I don't want to comment on that.
Okay, that's fine. I understand that. But if people want to claim I'm a fraud, go find out if that mission happened in Nicaragua, and then how would I know how it went down? You're telling me a bunch of classified information, and I'm the biggest fraud, and they arrest me and find out who's telling me, or I'm the real deal.
Fair enough. Eugene, I want to thank you for being with us. I told everyone last night to be sure they listened to the show tonight, and I assured everyone it would be fascinating, and I think we have not disappointed them. And I wish you all the best. I hope you are successful in not getting bumped off. But I'll tell you, some of the stuff you talk about is hot, hot, hot.
Well, if you want to do a future show on what really happened at Jonestown in Waco, I can tell you what really happened because I was at both locations.
All right, we'll talk.
That's up.
We'll talk.
All right.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, there you have it, Eugene B. Coulson. And I told you, didn't I, when I announced last night about the show tonight, I didn't give you any details, but I told you, I said, don't miss it. And I think we have, I think you have seen why I said don't miss it. I'm going to open up the telephone lines for you, and the telephone number is 623-237-3814. It should be coming up on your screen if you're watching our video feed, 623-237-3814. And the telephone line is open. Now, we've heard tonight some really out-on-the-edge information. Is it true? Is it not true? And by what measure do you use to say it's true? What measure do you use to say it's untrue? I have been very, very straightforward all the way from the beginning of this show. I don't mean this particular edition. I mean 8 years ago until right now. I have been very straightforward in saying that if there's someone that's making waves, if there's someone out there that is rocking boats in this genre, then instead of doing shows based on what other people have said about them, let's get them on. Let's hear it from the horse's mouth. Well, Eugene is making waves. He's rocking boats. And you have heard it from the horse's mouth. You now do not have to wonder based on what someone else has said. You have heard Eugene B. Colson. And what I would like to know is, what do you think about what you've heard? Is it true? Is it not true? I have to say that of all of the shows that I've ever done, and I've heard lots of fantastic things come across these telephone lines. Lots of fantastic things have come across these telephone lines. But I have to say, I don't think I have heard anything that quite matches that. That is really, and I'm not laughing at Eugene. I'm just laughing at me, I guess. I am really amazed and flabbergasted by some of the revelations that he makes. Do I believe them? Well, I don't believe anything. What I say, and you know this, what I say is either I know or I don't know, but believe, well, I don't engage in that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Okay, I've been put up to this by the chat crowd. This is Charles in Albuquerque.
Okay, Charles.
I have to hand it to you, Kevin. This has been a very interesting show.
Well, I told everyone last night it would be an interesting show.
Oh, well, we have to hand it to you. You have certainly lived up to your promise.
Well, listen, here's the thing. There is a possibility because, look, there are so many things that happen in the covert world. There is the possibility that story may be true. There is also always a possibility that it may not be true. And what measure would you use to determine whether this one is true or not?
Well, if I listen to a story like this, I listen to things like, internal consistency, possible divergence with from known reality, things like this. I have to hand it to you, though. I have not heard a better professional interrogation session with a person like this in a long time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's, as I said, I don't engage in I believe or disbelieve. I engage in I know or I don't know. And on this, I have to say, I don't know. I will tell you that there are things that he said to me in our private conversation yesterday that I have heard from other sources. And, I mean, bits and pieces that I have heard from other sources. I personally do not know of anything that I know that is classified. But I have heard little snippets over the years. And these are not snippets that are out on the internet. So I don't know of any way he could have known those unless he has been on the inside of some type of operations where he would have heard them.
Oh, I don't know. I'm afraid to me he sounded like a typical confabulator, someone who just will keep making up a story just as long as you keep keep hearing it.
So you don't buy the story at all, any pieces of it?
Well, I'm afraid I just can't. I mean, listening to the way he goes on about how he was the central hero of every story that he tells, I'm afraid it just smacks of total confabulation to me.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. You know, folks, you do understand that the purpose of having someone come on and speak to us is so that we don't have hearsay evidence. When we have someone come on and speak to us, we hear from them. And I think that's a very important thing. Now, this mission that he talks about in Nicaragua, I'm not familiar with that. Are you?
No, I'm not familiar with it, and I really didn't have time to look it up on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm certainly going to do that, I want to see what information I can find about it. What about this Project Monarch? Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Or actually, I guess it's Operation Monarch.
I think one of our chatters had time to Google that, and he alleges that there are some web hits on it with that spelling.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, Charles, I appreciate the call. I'm going to open this up for some more folks to call in with their thoughts and responses. And I do appreciate the call, and thanks for telling me that when I said it would be a fascinating show, that I hit the target.
Good indeed.
All right, thanks. All right, folks, the telephone is 623, the telephone number, 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. And let me make sure, yep, telephone line is open. I'd like to hear from you. Now, you've heard tonight really fantastic information. Now, by fantastic, I don't mean that it's untrue information. I mean, it's way outside the norm of what we normally hear. So how do you take this information? Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Trey from Atlanta.
Hi, Trey.
Hey, Kevin. Yeah, that was definitely an interesting show. The one thing about this is he just he had a lot of information. I know you said that, you know, you'd heard some of it before, so, you know, I think this guy, he could have been legitimate as far as, you know, is working for the working with the groups that he did here and there, but I think some of the information they said is probably made up, and it sounds and like your last caller said, he's always the central character, the central hero of a very story, and you know, so I don't know. I'm just saying. But one thing is you know, you let these people come on here, and the main thing is, Kevin, what you did is you let us know that, you know, none of this guy's credentials could be verified, kind of like you told us that you could verify Criswell's credentials. Now, you know, all that means is that there was someone that you could call and verify Criswell's credentials. It doesn't mean that it was Criswell's, you know, is all true. I mean, Criswell could work, you know, could be a plant as far as you know. But as far as what he did, you can corroborate it, and you couldn't corroborate as far as any of this information, so you did make mm-hmm. that distinction. So.
Yeah, and let me say, while I cannot prove anything, I can't even prove that I exist. While I cannot prove that Dick Criswell is not disinformation, I certainly do not think he is. I do not believe he is. And so far as I know, he's never told me anything that didn't check out. So, you know, but now this is a whole new ball of wax here, this story tonight. We're hearing things. I have to say I've heard things tonight that I have not heard before. And I'm just curious, you know, by what criteria people are determining whether they buy it or don't buy it. Now, I don't think it's, personally, I don't think it's necessary to buy or not buy. I think it's quite all right to simply say, I don't know. But from what I'm hearing and what I'm understanding from you is that you don't buy it.
Well, you know, not the whole story. No, I can't. It's just one of those deals. There's a difference. I mean, I know, like, for example, contactees, you're different than abductees. So a contactee is going to have more information. You would expect that. So, but the more information I hear, the more detail I hear, the harder it is for me to go along with. But I'm like you. I listen for things that I've heard other people say before and things that you know, when you hear it, it makes sense. And so, yeah, I can understand that, you know, like I said, this guy probably was telling you some things that were the truth. And when you were behind closed doors, and, you know, there's a chance that he was telling some other stuff that wasn't, and was telling us some stuff that wasn't. But, you know, hey, we can decide for ourselves. And you know, thanks for not censoring it and being open to all kind of guests and everything.
But, well, look, I guess he's making waves.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Kevin.
All right, thanks for the call. All right, folks, the telephone line is open for you, and the telephone number is 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. Caller, you're live on the Kevin. Oh, that caller is gone. Sorry about that. The telephone number again, 623-237-3814. And I'd like to know what you think about, not just what you think about what you heard tonight, but why? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, what an entertaining show it was tonight. It was absolutely amazing. I didn't want to call in and be like one of those judge critics, like, oh, you know, he's not true or true. I was just thinking that was absolutely amazing. And is there any way you can put that in the members area?
Yes, as a matter of fact, all the shows go into the members area over the weekend. So it will be in the members area in the K-Pods. This is Friday, so by Monday, all of this week's shows will be in the members area.
I guess I just had two little things, though, if I was going to add about some of the stuff that I heard.
Okay.
I thought that it seemed a little bit out there with some of the stories, as far as like the machete, the two bullet holes, and then standing up there. Like, if somebody was really trained to be a SEAL or in combat or anything like that, I don't see heroes working the same way that he was describing them. However, he did mention something about being drugged before he got to some of the scenes. Could you tell me what you would think that possibly the narcotics would have an after effect to make him possibly do something like that, or make him just remember it differently? And,
oh, it could do all of that. Yeah.
Well, the one question I had was, before I hang up, was why did they find the need to drug him to get him there in the first place? Thanks.
You know, that's a good question, and I simply didn't think of that question. Why was he drugged? I don't know. I simply didn't think of that question. Sorry. Excellent question. All right, we'll be back right after this break with more of your telephone calls, comments, thoughts, and maybe beliefs. We'll be back. We are back. It's the Kevin Smith Show, and I am Kevin Smith, your host, and we have just been treated to probably one of the most amazing stories, one of the most amazing testimonies that has ever been presented on this show. There is always the possibility, regardless of how bizarre or strange or out on the edge information may seem, there is always the possibility that it is true. There was a time when the idea that the earth, in fact, was round was considered bizarre. That idea was not only considered bizarre, it was considered heresy. And yet, we know today that it's true. There is always the possibility when we hear something that's way outside our norm that it is, nevertheless, the truth. Now, I'm not asking anyone to believe anything. You know I don't do that. I don't have an agenda to get you to believe that something is true or to get you to believe that something is not true. If I have an agenda, my agenda is to bring to you the information that's making waves. And I think you can tell from what you've heard tonight that this information is making waves. I have some questions, and the answers to those questions are still unclear. One question being, how do you escape from Area 51? We've heard stories about people getting across the line and over on Area 51 property and never returning. We hear about those things. But are they real? Well, I think probably they are. There are signs up that say that deadly force is authorized. So how do you escape from Area 51? I don't know. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
I'm Maria, and I'm in Alabama.
Hi, Maria. Are you a first-time caller?
I am.
Well, let me play some applause for you here. We're glad you called. What's on your mind?
Well, I thought it was a very interesting show. This is actually only my second live show, so I guess I was trial by fire, right?
Well, yeah. But I'll tell you what. Now, we have some amazing shows frequently. I have to say this one leads the pack.
Well, I've actually listened to quite a few shows, but I've been listening to the K-Pods.
Uh-huh.
This is my second live show.
Uh-huh.
It was a very interesting show. I've got to say that I don't believe everything that he had to say, but I think that there was probably kernels of truth. I believe he believes everything that he said. I think there are some psychological issues that he's dealing with. There was no emotion as he spoke, and on topics, it was quite obvious to me there should have been some emotion.
Yeah, but now let me ask you to think about this. People who have been through the kind of programming and training that he's talking about having gone through would very possibly not show emotion. I can talk to you, because I've been a cop most of my life, I can talk to you about a lot of things that would just shake people up, and they would think, well, that's just horrific. I mean, how could you discuss that? Yeah, it was horrific, but because of the training, I had to be there, and I had to deal with it professionally, and I can write about it and talk about it, write reports, you know, and then talk about it, testify in court, and not be emotional. And if he's been through anything, any kind of training that's at least that level, and he's talking about way beyond that, I think that would account for that.
I suppose so. I think I'm a pretty good judge of people. I listen to them, and I can read them pretty well, even if I'm not looking at them face-to-face. Of course, that always helps. But I don't know. There just wasn't anything there to latch on to.
Uh-huh.
I found it interesting that while he was asking questions while at Area 51, that they were so readily answered. That's unusual. Every question he had was answered as I don't know, he was a little too important, I guess. I'd like to know what the Eugene report that goes across the president's desk several times a day says.
Wouldn't that be fascinating if we could see that report?
Yeah, wouldn't that be good?
Mm-hmm.
That might, you know, corroborate his story, and then we could believe a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, what did you, tell me your name again.
Maria.
Maria. And you're calling from Alabama.
Correct.
Maria, I want to thank you for the call, and I hope you'll call in again.
Oh, thank you. I will.
All right. Have a good evening. All right, folks, the telephone line is open. Amazing information, and I think that Eugene would recognize that it is amazing information. And, you know, we hear on this show, we hear what most of the world considers amazing information almost every night. For a lot of us, what we hear on this show seems normal and even maybe mundane sometimes, but for the rest of the world that are not, you know, sort of plugged into this genre, it's new stuff for them, and it's amazing information for them. Well, I think we who are sort of jaded by hearing so much, we got amazed tonight. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Kevin, this is Don calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Don.
How you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for asking.
I just don't know. You know me, I'm very cautious, and I kind of lean towards not buying this guy's story. I picked up the same thing as Charles did. This guy comes across like he's a superhero in every, you know, event that... He's Indiana Jones, Sergeant York, all rolled into one, you know. I'm not buying it.
Okay.
I think he's got some issues. I don't know. Is he pushing a book?
No.
No?
No. No book. No tapes. No DVDs. So, I don't know, man. You know, that's where I stand. Of course, you knew I would. You know me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm going to say. I just don't know.
And I basically, I'll say I don't know, but I got to lean in this a little bit one direction that this guy is coming across like he's a flake.
Well, do you think that there are parts of his story that are true?
I don't know. I really don't know. And I think if he's lying, he's lying about it all. He made it up. Or he's delusional. He's imagining the story or whatever.
Well, when I first heard it, and I heard a lot of other things that he discussed with me or that he told me, when I had to just be amazed at some of it, and just say, man, I just don't know. I don't know. But look, here's the deal. Anyone who's ever served in the military, or anyone who's ever served as I did with international police, and you're working alongside the military in a lot of these missions, you know that things happen. That let me put this caveat in. I have never ever experienced personally anything as fantastic as what we heard tonight, but I have seen things happen that never make the news, and that if I were to sit here and tell about them, I think most people would not believe them, and yet I know for sure it happened. I was there.
Oh, sure. You know, hey, that's what you talk about every night. That's what I publish every day on my site. It's stuff that the average person out there may not believe, but we know there's possibilities to anything and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just taking everything this guy said, like he coming across like this. He's some on-screen movie hero, you know. He's a hero in everything he does.
And make a heck of a movie, wouldn't it?
Yeah, really. And he's coming. He claims to be coming across the president's desk several times a day. Come on, now. I find that hard to believe that, you know, they're going to focus a number of times a day on this guy. Hey, maybe if you know the government wants him, he's coming across periodically. But I think if he's coming across the president's desk several times a day and they want to kill him, they would have already killed him. I don't think God or anybody's going to save this guy. He would have been dead a long time ago.
All right. Well, listen, Don, I appreciate the call. I appreciate the information.
Okay. Take care, Kevin.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, folks. The telephone number is 623-237-3814. If you have an opinion or a comment, Dr. Bob told me during the show, you probably saw me look across the room and smile. He told me during the show that the chat room was lit up. So I know a lot of you do have some opinions and comments. 623-237-3814. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from? Hello, caller. All right, the caller is not there. 623-237-3814. When you start talking about anything that's allegedly secret classified information, you know, those of us who do not have access to that information just have to say, I don't know, or you can say, I don't believe it, or I do believe it, but I mean, who can say, I know it's true, except those who were there or who have seen the files. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
This is Colin from New York.
Colin, what's on your mind?
The reason why I tend to definitely not believe him is because he crushed larynxes. He shot all of them in the left knee. Everyone monitors his calls. So these are overblown statements throughout his story.
Can you hang on through the break?
No, I don't want to hang on tonight, but I
okay.
Say he was very inconsistent with the overblown statements throughout his story, and that just tends to say he's lying, you know?
All right, thanks for the call, man. Got to run. We're into the break. Thanks, and folks, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host, and we are on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left. During the break, Dr. Bob handed me some information here about the MK Ultra and Project Monarch. The Canadian government has now paid $7 million in damages to the unwitting guinea pigs of federally funded brainwashing experiments in Montreal, Canada. And this is an article about a doctor, Dr. Ewan, I think it's pronounced Ewan, maybe it's Ewan, Cameron. And apparently he was involved in that in some way. The existence of MK Ultra is an established fact. The existence of Monarch is an established fact. We've heard some, as I have said several times, amazing testimony here tonight. And I call it testimony because it is a person saying, here is what happened to me, and here is how I was involved. Here is what I saw. Here's what I did. Here's what I said. That's testimony. Now, it is up to all of us who hear this testimony to determine if we think that it's accurate or if we think that it's not accurate testimony. If you think it's accurate, there has to be some reason why. And if you think it's not accurate, there has to be some reason why. It's not good enough when we're talking about things so momentous, it is not good enough just to say, I feel like it's not true, or I feel like it's true. I know we all feel, but it's not good enough. And the reason it's not, look, if you were on a jury and you were in court and the defendant is despicable in every way, that has nothing to do, the way you feel about that defendant has nothing to do with the evidence being presented in court. How you feel does not matter. You have to look at the evidence. And when it's not good enough for us to say, well, I feel like this guy was telling the truth, or I feel like he's not telling the truth. Feeling has nothing to do with reality. And so if you have determined that you think it is true, there has to be a reason why. A reason, not a feeling. If you've determined that this is not true, you don't think it is true, then there has to be a reason why you think it's not true and not just a feeling. And I think that most of our audience that has called in this evening has been sharing with us the reasons why they think it is not true, or in some cases they said, I think part of it may be true. And they've been sharing the reasons why. This is an excellent example, probably one of the best examples, of what I talk about all the time when I talk about freedom of speech. When I say that we need to let people talk, we need to let them tell their story, and we need to hear it. We need to hear it from them, and then we can make up our own minds. I think this is one of the best examples that we've had, well, in a long time, because what we heard is, well, quite frankly, it's way out on the edge beyond what we normally hear. And so I think it's an excellent exercise for all of us to listen carefully, to think about what was said, how it was said, and then make up our own minds. Some of you have not graduated yet to being able to put your feelings aside. And that is so important. Here is why. We are approaching 2012. Many, 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 many millions of people around this world are telling us all kinds of things about 2012 and what's coming. And some say it's not going to be a big deal. Some people say it's going to be a horrific deal. And then there's all sorts of variations in the middle. Maybe it's not going to be anything at all, but maybe it is. As we approach this momentous date, we need to be able to hear information, sift that information for truth, and take out of it what is true for our use. I had a college professor that used to say that hearing people talk or reading books, gathering information and testimony is sort of like eating fish. When you're eating fish and you come to a bone, just eat around it and keep going. Well, that's kind of how we have to do when we're sifting truth. In some cases, there are a lot of bones, and there's not much meat. In some cases, there's a lot of meat and not a lot of bones. But we have to sift. We have to do that. We have to think. Not feel, but think. I'm not telling you that humans should not have feelings. What I am telling you is if you put them in the driver's seat, you're going to run off the edge of the cliff every time. Eventually, your feelings are going to run you off the cliff. You can't be devoid of feeling, but you can't let them drive. What has to drive in our search for truth is reason. What has to drive is rational thought. So when you apply rational thought to something that sounds irrational, sometimes you come down on a side of saying it is irrational. Sometimes you come down saying, well, it's true. And sometimes you come down saying, I just don't know. And I have to say, with most of the edge information, I don't know. Let's investigate more. Let's question more. Let's think some more. Let's come up with some more evidence. And until we do, we're not obligated to believe or disbelieve. It's okay to have an open mind and simply to say, I don't know. Let's investigate more. I will say this. I will say that the story of Eugene B. Colson, as presented on this show tonight, is one of the most amazing stories that I have ever heard. I have to also say, I don't know. Let's investigate more. Let's think some more. Let's see if we can come up with more evidence. And it may be that as fantastic as it sounds, it may be that we come down eventually saying it's true. It may be that we come down saying on the side of the fence saying it's not true. But I just don't have enough information or evidence at this point to make that decision. So as judges often do, I will take it under advisement, and we will see. Well, I tell you what, folks, this has been one fantastic week. I've enjoyed it. I hope the rest of our phone system arrives soon so that we can reopen all of the lines and take calls where you can talk to the guest. And hopefully that will happen. If you haven't subscribed to the K-Files E-Zine, do it right now because it's going to go out in the morning. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back. Again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.